Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors. A clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. And we shall in fact begin. Welcome. This is Chris Grimes. This is the show in which I invite movers, makers, shakers, mavericks, influencers, and also personal heroes. And a personal hero is here today. We have comedy gold, comedy establishment in The Clearing. This is Arabella Weir, who is the fast show queen. So you're very, very welcome to the good.
That's a very nice way of putting it. Of course, I'm not a hero. I'm a heroine.
Yes, indeed you are. Quite right, too. I think you'll find you're called Arabella Helen Weir. Just proving I've done some research here. You're an American-born British comedian, actress, writer and presenter. And, of course, best known. I saw the Fast Show again beautifully in the not a reverb.
A reboot.
Reboot. You are the perfect comedy foil to the likes of Charlie Higson, Paul Whitehouse, John Thompson, Simon Day and Mark Williams, and of course the sadly departed and much missed Caroline Ahern. You were the two wonderful women in the show.
Thank you, but I think I would object, I do mean object, to the word foil, because that implies that I was a sidekick. And although I was often a sidekick in many of the sketches, of course, I did all my own stuff as well.
Yes, you did. You are one of my favourite characters is within, you know, Painting with Johnny. It is just the most wonderful character.
Oh, well, I am a foil in that sketch, very much so, yes.
And also, if I may, when I was researching you, in an article about you, it did say, if you'll pardon this expression, you made a fortune from your bum. Because, of course, does my bum look big in this?
Yes, I wouldn't say a fortune, but I definitely, the thing I always said was that my bum ended up paying for its own upkeep.
Shall we say?
Yes, and then so that's, yes. I was very article, fortunate, but does my bum look big in this?
Yes, a wonderful theatre show, road tour, as well as a book. Ben said you made your money through your big bum looking big in this, and then, of course, some of it went away when you decided to get a divorce, is what the article said.
Yeah, oh yes. Gosh, I wonder where that was. I can't remember. But yes, probably said that a few times, haven't I?
Yes, you're very welcome to the show. And also, I hold you in particular high esteem because I used to work with Julia Davis, and I know back in the day you were very, very important in giving her a nudge in the right direction, as I understand it, where you introduced her to Steve Coogan.
That's right. I introduced her to Steve Coogan, and I introduced her to the long split up and not very admirably, but to Graham Linehan and Arthur Matthews, because they put her in Big Train.
Yes.
Because I said, this girl's brilliant. And to be absolutely accurate, I didn't introduce Julia to Steve Coogan. I introduced her to Paul Roberts, who was running the production company that Steve did his tour with. But I said, this girl's great. Use her. So, yes, I've been a long fan, supporter, mentor, whatever you want to say, to Julia.
Wonderful. And bless you for that. So also, it's been a bit like herding cats getting you to this point, because when we nearly recorded before, we were all set to go and you had a power cut, and your son Archie was on the blower to me telling me that mum's downstairs on her hands and knees trying to find the fuse box. So that was
wasn't quite the fuse box, but yeah, we had a massive power surge in the area, and I kept thinking, what do people who are on life support machines and everything do? But yeah, we had a massive, and it was my son. God, that was a long time ago then.
Yes, well, I've been trying to nurture you as a wonderful cat ever since. Welcome.
Thank you.
And I like the fact you keep correcting me on, no, I didn't do that. I did this quite right too.
Well, I think it's important because the amount of times people have gone, aren't you this and aren't you that? And you go, no. And they go, oh, but I'm sure I read this. And you go, no, that's not me. Anyway, yes. Here we are.
And you know that lovely, very clunky question, which is deliberately to see how you either escape or answer this. If someone doesn't have a reference, by the way, can I just commend you on your nails? Are you drying them as we speak? You keep waiting.
I'm showing them off, yes. They're, I very rarely have painted nails, but I painted them and yes, and now I'm enjoying them. Yes, go on.
My daughter calls her nails her clackers. So can I commend you for your clackers, Arabella Weir?
How old's your daughter?
She's 25 and she's called Lily.
Ah, okay. Clackers. Never heard that. Clackers. Oh, as in clacking. Yeah, very good. Very good.
Yeah. So anyway, they're called clackers, just in case you'd like to add that to the Arabella Weir family canon. Look at mummy's new clackers, you can say.
And I've got a son called... Ew, mum, that sounds like so gross.
And I've got a son called Stan, because I love Stan Laurel. So that's my family completely. I know you have another daughter called Isabella.
I do.
Anyway, I have done some research, but if at any point you need to correct me, I don't doubt that you will, which is lovely.
Sure.
So a clunky question. When someone says, oh, hello, you look interesting, what do you do? What's your favourite way of avoiding or answering that question? So how would you define what Arabella is all about?
Oh, that's a good question. I think I just usually say I'm a comedy performer and writer because I have obviously done theatre, but I mainly do TV. And then, yeah, I think I just say I'm a comedy performer and writer.
Lovely. And Calendar Girls is one of your West End productions that I remember you being in.
Yes, God, I'm only making that face because, yeah. Next question.
So did you enjoy Calendar Girls then? I'm taking it, not really.
I was going through a very bad time, and I think I was just sort of doing that thing you do when you're not fully feeling like you're in control of your life and going, oh, well, somebody's asked me, so yeah, whatever. And I would say that's been a theme throughout my career and, in fact, my romantic life, because I had such a little idea of what I wanted, and I never believed I had choices, so I said yes to pretty much everything, rather than believing I had choices and thinking, well, wait a minute. Say no to this because something else will come along.
But also, can I just commend that with the resurgence of the Fast Show stage show, it was just such a wonderful, nostalgic, just a roller coaster of old, brilliant brilliance that stood the test of
time. The old hits.
The old hits. I mean, loads of bangers. I had had Charlie Higson in the show a couple of months before, and I was really happy. A bit of Wee came out when he gave me a free ticket because it had sold out at the Bristol Beacon. So I managed to get in on one of the last squeaky tickets. And it was a joy to meet you there too, which was lovely.
Oh, well, thank you.
So here we go then. It is my great pleasure to have you here in the Good Listening To Show. There's going to be, if I may curate you through the journey, a clearing, a tree, a lovely juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold, a couple of random squirrels, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's absolutely all to play for. And there's an invitation and an invocation to go as deep as you like, where you like, when you like. Please do feel free to take it on the open road of wherever you feel that you'd like to. So welcome. Delighted to have you here. First of all, where is what is a serious happy place or a clearing for Arabella Weir? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
If I'm on my own, then a hot bath in my own bathroom, ensuite bathroom, makes it sound very grand, but I bought this house a very, very long time ago and had very little money, but I was able to make an ensuite bathroom. And I've got a huge bath and I lie in that. And sometimes if I'm feeling very indulgent, with a glass of wine and a book, or I'll listen to a podcast and I can think there. Or one of my favorite things is to make phone calls, have a nice long chat while I'm in the bath. But I would say if I've got to choose one clearing happy place, it would be in my kitchen with my children and my closest friends, having a nice meal and some wine. And that's probably where I'm my most happy.
Both beautiful answers. And the I love the through line of the glass of wine in both situs.
Obs.
And did you know you share a bath with Charlie Higson? He said a bath too.
Not in a million years will I ever be sharing a bath with Charlie Higson, but figuratively, I'm with you.
He likes to teach her on the edge of the bath, in, I think, the acoustic of the bath, rather than being plunged in with a phone and a glass of wine and a good book and a podcast, which you do.
Yes, so, I like it all. I like to be in the bath, glass of wine, podcast or phone. But yeah, that's my individual happy place.
Wonderful. So if you'll allow me to, I'm quite enamoured with the bathroom idea, because the comedy now is I'm going to arrive with a tree. You're free to cover up with bubbles and all that sort of thing, but I'm going to arrive with a tree, metaphorically. This is a very tasteful delivery of a tree to your bath chamber. And I'm now going to arrive with a tree. And this is deliberately a bit sort of Waiting for Godot-esque because of my hecting background, where we're going to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out How do you like these apples? And this is your answer to a lovely construct, which I hope you enjoy and enjoyed researching, called 54321, where Arabella, you've had 5 minutes to have thought about four things that have shaped you, three things that inspire you, two things that never fail to grab your attention and borrowed from the film Up. That's where the random squirrels will come in. Oh, squirrels. And then the one is a quirky or unusual fact about you. We couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us. It's not a memory test. Let me just reassure you of that. So over to you to interpret the shaking of the canopy of your tree.
Both my parents were Scottish. And I had one granny who would be described in Scotland as nippy sweetie, which, shall we just say, economical with love and affection, and very uneconomical with criticism.
But the other granny
was a kind, loving, unbelievably affectionate person, and she shaped me because my parents also went in for withholding everything, love, support. It was all very, what do you think you're doing? And or moreover, very Scottish, this, who do you think you are? Someone special. And that granny was very much not like that. So she shaped me because she was just a lovely person. And she taught me that you could love people and not criticize them all the time. And that didn't make up part of how you necessarily were close to people. So granny, her name was Shishi. I mean, it wasn't, that was her nickname. Granny Shishi was a huge part of my shaping. And therefore, I would say the second thing would be Scotland. Because although I never went to school in Scotland, I'm obviously English speaking, and I know I sound English, but we were brought up, my siblings and I, in foreign countries by Scots, two Scottish people. So everything was about Scotland. And I remember being, when I was about five, somebody saying, oh, so are you English? We were in the Middle East. And obviously I said yes or something, and my father snapped, you are not English. So love of Scotland, perhaps looking back, sentimentality about Scotland.
And you were American born. So how long, was your dad an ambassador? Is that why you were away?
My dad was a career, he wasn't an ambassador then, he was a career diplomat. So he'd been posted to America for a short time. So people often think I am American, but I'm, you know, they just happened to be there. And because I think it's still true, there is some American law that if a child is born there, they get claimed by the American government. So my first passport when I was 9 months old had to be American when my parents were coming back to Scotland. So yeah, that the second thing I would say, and also Scotland was the home of the only person I knew who showed me unconditional love. Granny and Scotland became one thing where I was happy and loved, although the other granny, who was very unkind, also lived in Scotland. But I think the whole Scotland as embodied by Granny Shishi played a huge part of my life, and that we were brought up listening to Scottish music, listening to Scottish comedians. When I was brought up in the 60s, there was no TV in the foreign country. Yeah. So you would listen to records and it would all be Stanley Baxter and, you know, people my parents had listened to and Scottish country music. So that would be the second thing I'd say had shaped me. And I would say, given the career I ended up having, I would say my body has shaped me. Now, that sounds a bit sort of, what I really mean is my attitude to my body. Because for as long as I can remember, I was told that I was fat and not pretty by my parents.
Gosh.
Well, I think the idea being...
Can I just ask, how happy you had a nanny she in your life? Because she was, of course, the soft cushion of an otherwise very austere, very upbringing.
Oh, yeah, no, granny never said you can't eat that and you can't. I mean, not, and of course, at granny's, I wasn't trying to eat packets of biscuits and stuff. So right, for as long as I can remember, I was told that I was the wrong size and that, you know, it was just a question of, you don't have to go far to find Presbyterians saying all you need to do is eat cold porridge, or rather of that era, eat cold porridge and you'll be a better person. So I remember early on, I'd have been about 6 or 7, and I said, I'm hungry. Now, remember, it's hard for people to think about or rather to recall, but unless they're old enough. But there were no ads about diets or diet books or people going on about their health regime. People didn't talk about weight and all that sort of thing in the way they do now. Mm. And I remember being about, I must 7 or 8, and I said, I'm hungry. And my mother said, good, it's good for you.
Crikey.
And it was the first time I remember thinking, I do not understand that concept. Not I'm resisting it and what do you mean? I know I'm fat, but can't I have something to eat? I literally didn't understand. I thought I've got an annoying feeling in my stomach and I'm being told that's good for me, but I don't understand.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
And do you have siblings as well? So, or were you just
yeah,
the
but they weren't. They were. My brothers were sent to boarding school. They're a tiny bit older than me, but they were sent to boarding school when they were toddlers.
Yeah.
And my sister's 5 years younger than me. And if we all did family therapy one day, I'm sure we could all discuss this, which I won't be doing. Thank you very much. But she came out as one of those stick thin, just humans, you know, that have kind of long, thin arms and legs.
And how apposite that later on, does my bum look big in this, was a way of really channeling all of that earlier instilled neurosis, but actually being, you caught the zeitgeist in a way that was...
Well, yes. I mean, I look back now and I think... So you literally subconsciously chose the one career that would ensure that you were the wrong size, that somehow you didn't fit, because you weren't going into that career as a kind of size 10, as everybody was of the leading girls in my day when I started in 1979. You were going into a place where people think it's incredible now, but I mean, directors often used to say to me, well, we'd like to give you the part because you're very pretty, but you're too fat.
Gordon Bennett, crikey.
But then it was normal. It was the 70s and early 80s. And of course people said that to you because you were allowed to say that to women.
Yeah.
I mean, allowed. By anyway, so that's the third thing, my body shape, or rather my attitude to body shape. And the fourth thing that has shaped me, my stroppiness, because it was... the reason I told the story about thinking, but I don't understand, when my mum said good, you know, about being hungry, was my great good fortune is that I remember thinking this. I mean, I didn't think fuck this when I was eight, but I remember thinking, very unfortunately for a lot of my teachers, I learned early on that I wasn't going to lie down and just go, oh, okay then.
Yes.
I was going to go, no, I don't understand. That's not happening. And in fact, as anybody of my generation will have had a number of times, going on to a much darker subject, the amount of times a bloke would expose himself to you, which happened all the time in the 60s, I don't know why it doesn't happen, maybe it does. But I remember thinking, no, I'm not having this. And then I would sort of go, there's a man over here with his willy out. I just remember thinking, if I'm going down, if I'm going to be defeated, I'm not going to do it without knowing that I didn't fight back. So my kind of, yeah, so my stroppiness has served me well and has very much shaped me.
And it's sort of an early feministic sort of instinct to, I will not just, yes, stroppiness is a great way to exemplify that, I think.
But yes, I think that's true. I think it was an early form of, you know, in a kid, feminism. But I just remember thinking, because I was told explicitly right from the beginning that my brothers were better than me.
Christ,
I mean, there was no question. Boys are better than girls. That's it. I remember my father explicitly saying this, even though my mother had an Oxford degree. Girls need to be thin and pretty. And so I remember thinking, I love my brothers, but I don't remember thinking, oh, well, they are actually better than me.
Of course.
But it was made very plain, and everything about society was basically going, girls need to be thin and pretty first and foremost, then they can get Oxford degrees and stuff.
And may I ask, are mummy and daddy, delightful creatures that they are, still with us, or are they?
No, long dead, both of them.
Yes, there's that wonderful liberation of, you know, that expression, your parents F you up, and you've got the great freedom of thinking, they definitely did, and no thank you to the therapy, but all great. Really powerful stuff, and extraordinary conditioning as well, to then give you the antidote of then making a lot of this into comic characterizations.
Well, I remember very, very early on, God, I'd have been, I don't remember the event, but I must have been kind of three, I remember thinking, I am funny. Then it must have just been a little girl kind of being charming, or whatever you call toddlers, engaging. And I remember thinking, I can do this. or this is how I'll make people want me in the room.
Yeah.
I will be funny and engaging. I can't have thought it out like that at three, but I certainly had worked it out by the time I was six or seven.
Yes.
That I wasn't going to be the thinnest or the prettiest girl in the room, but I was definitely going to be the funniest.
And to your early comment about, you know, being the wrong shape, what I love about comedy is when the comedy of shape, so stature, Laurel and Hardy, for example, the fat, the thin, it's the outline is always very interesting, I think. The one that's not doing what everybody else is doing. And that's really appealing.
I really, really love the character you play, Doreen, Colin Hunt's colleague as well. I mean, that's just such a lovely
character.
Oh, fact.
Yes. No, again, you're right, it was a foil there. Yes, I like playing
this woman. It wasn't comfortable when I said that, because you've got to be the perfect antithesis or antidote to whatever's being presented in that sort of yes and comedy improvisation.
But those characters that are so unlike me, like Doreen or like Minty in Posh Nosh that I did with Richard E. Grant, where I'm playing so against type, people who do go, oh, he's such a tease, when people are being absolutely horrible, instead of what I would say, which is, why don't you go yourself? So, yes, it's impossible for me to imagine being in the room with Colin Hunt as
yes.
me.
Yes. And thanks again for mentioning the word stroppy, because it was really delightful when you said, I'm not a foil, and you were, if I may say, a tiny bit stroppy with my early introduction, which I thank you for. That's wonderful shapage. Lovely. And now we're on to three things that inspire you, please. Arabella Weir.
My friends, having had, shall we say, at the very least, a fractious family and not particularly supportive in my youth or as I grew up, I made friends at school when I was 11 who are still my very close friends. And I have made extremely good friends along the way. And I would say my close friends inspire me. They inspire me to do well. They inspire me in the efforts they make in their lives and in the things they've survived. Because by this age, there's been quite a few tragedies. And their belief in me, their commitment to me inspires me.
So the sort of collegiate friendship era was 11 onwards is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't really want to admit to this, but because I think if I could get away with it, what I'd do is sit around at home eating chocolate biscuits and then drinking wine all day watching Judge Judy. I'm always very inspired, again, by my friends, but by people who work hard.
Yeah.
Funny enough, I'm not inspired at all by people climbing Everest and that sort of thing, because I just think, why on earth would you risk your life? I mean, that just seems silly. You know, you've got a lovely life. Why go up the mountain? Oh, yeah, there's a very good chance I won't make it this time. You're thinking, well, then don't do it. Whereas
you'd be a really good Sherpa. You call yourself the stroppy Sherpa. No, carry it yourself. I don't want it.
Well, I mean, if you're not making it, then I'm not coming up there with you. Yes, hard work inspires me. And people who've overcome adversity, I'm always incredibly inspired by that, because I just think it's quite hard to overcome adversity. And being able to see the positive and keeping going when things have happened, or whether it be a disability or a tragedy or something, yes. I always think, yeah, that's what you need to do. You can't sit around going, oh, I feel so bad.
There is a lovely through line there in overcoming adversity, because you had the overcoming of your own adversity of your slightly fractious childhood, and then now you admire it in others. So that's a really resonant through line in that. And now we're on to squirrels. What are your two, what never fails to stop you in your tracks, irrespective of anything else that might be going on for you?
Funnily enough, I've had just an experience of it today. I'm not a man-hater. I've got one at home. And I keep one at home, but I got an email today not asking how I was, not reminding me of how we'd met, nothing, just saying, I'm in a bad place, my wife wants me to move out, could I rent a room? And I've literally not got you can torture me and I will not be able to tell you who this person is.
Wow.
And I just thought, that to me sums up the worst of heterosexual men. You're not saying, never mind that I'm off the telly or anything like that. You're not saying, hello, I hope you're well, it's been a while, or even I am still remembering that lovely lunch we had in blah, and then I might be able to go, oh, it's that guy.
You had no trace under torture. It's just a completely random email, almost like an email.
It's almost a random email.
Yeah.
Except for that, he's got my email.
Yes.
And it's not spam because he's not asking for money.
Yeah.
And I'm just literally thinking, and it just, you know, and my dad was certainly one of them. And again, this is where my stroppiness comes from. It's the entitlement, I suppose, the entitlement of some generally white, middle-class, middle-aged men going, no, but I want this. And you're literally going, yeah, but I mean, what about me? I mean, I am actually in the room. So even if you were pretending, what about a bit of, hello, how are you?
A little bit of grace, yes, would be nice.
And somebody of my age, of course, has had more. I mean, my daughter is 26. Her and her friends would all naturally think there was something wrong with a bloke of their age who said, is this all right to send?
Yes.
But I was looking at the email and I thought, you're actually asking me a favour and yet you're not.
Yes, no grace. Yeah.
No charm, no nothing. You're just thinking, I need something. I know, I'll send her an email. So to be absolutely fair, obviously that's a very extreme example. But in short, male, usually heterosexual, usually white, entitlement, never. I had a bloke who is extraordinarily well-educated and extremely successful in his field, world-famous economist. This was the absolute, the other side, a bit more comedic, saying he fancied me. And I was at least 32 at the time. And I went, well, I'm really sorry, but I just don't feel the same. And he went, no, but I fancy you. And I went, yeah. I think, yeah. I said, I don't know what you're not getting about this, but I definitely have choice and I definitely need to fancy you back. And he absolutely couldn't get it. And I remember thinking, oh, yeah. And that guy is highly intelligent and functioning. So it's but, not but like he's sort of, you know, on the spectrum.
But he's an economist with the truth, or economist with self-awareness, shall we say. Yes.
Zero. It was just, I fancy you a lot, so off we go. No, mate. I've got sexual agency. So, yeah. And what's the other thing that stops me in my tracks?
If I may say, your stroppiness is your superpower. So, bless you. I really do think it is.
It might have got me out of quite a lot of bad situations and also got me into quite a lot of bad situations. This sounds a bit soppy, but so what? I became a mother late and I'm always stopped in my tracks by the enormity of the love I have for my children and how lucky I am to have got them later in life, statistically late. And yeah, I feel unbelievably lucky, unbelievably blessed. And I know they're mine, but I think they are exceptional young people with a really fantastic sense of social conscience and work ethic. And they're good people. I'm not saying they're perfect. Of course, they're a pain in the ass at times. But yeah, I never fail.
I was going to suggest that I don't doubt for a moment you've put right all of the sort of toxicity that brought you to that point where, and now I'm a parent, we'll put all this right.
I mean, to her eternal credit, my mother, who was, you know, not a scintilla of maternal love did she have. And one day she said, really just to be mischievous, something unpleasant about what I was doing with my then toddler little girl. She said, if I were you, I wouldn't do that. And I said, you know what? I'm going to do everything you say as a parent. I am going to do exactly the opposite with my children. And to her eternal credit, she said, yes, well, then you probably won't put a foot wrong. And I thought, well, at least you know.
Well, I think that's almost the punchline of the relationship almost, and with accompanied by a deft punch in intent.
Yeah.
No, well said, well put.
Every time I was doing anything with my kids, I thought, no, don't do that. That's your programming. Do this.
What was your kindest, best guess on why your mum and dad would have set out on that particular path of parental F-wittery?
It's not a guess. They were Scottish Presbyterian. It's all about hard work, their background. It's all about denial. There's to be no such thing as, you know, lolling about, enjoying yourself all day. What would you do that for? It was about achieving, doing good, not thinking of yourself. You know, it's not about you. It's about the world and, or rather, the greater good. I mean, neither of them were religious. I think they were both quite damaged. They were both very good looking. I think they were both very vain. And I mean, they were both exceptionally good looking. So I think, you know, by any standard. So I think they were vain and wanted successful, beautiful children. I mean, of course, they loved me in their own way, but I don't think they knew. But love is a doing word.
Yes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
The final is the one now, a quirky or unusual fact about you, Arabella, that we couldn't possibly know about you until you tell us.
It's not entirely true that you couldn't possibly know it about me, but you'd have to know where to look to find this out. I was in a band called Bazooka Joe when I was 15. Our last gig was where we'd been booked and we were very popular because we played proper rock and roll 1950s danceable tunes, but we also did a few songs of our own, but in that style.
Were you playing instruments or singing, or what were you doing?
Singing.
Yeah.
And in 1970, I'm going to get this wrong, but let's say 76, we were playing St. Martin's School of Art. We were top line, top bill. And we were being supported by a band playing for the first time ever. And they were booed off within under a minute. And that was the Sex Pistols.
Wow.
And you the reason there. It is out there in Wikipedia or whatever is because our bass player was called Stuart Goddard at the time, but he changed his name to Adam Ant.
Good grief. Fantastic. So the Johnny Lydon, would he say hello, Arabella, as in Mr. Sex Pistols?
Unlikely, but in Adam's autobiography, he mentions me, but in John Lydon's, I don't think he does. But then, of course, he does mention that they were supporting a band that Adam Ant was in.
Wow.
Arguably more interesting thing that nobody could possibly know about me, but that was also very much a thing that shaped me. When I was 15, at the same time, on a Saturday, I was a checkout girl in Marks and Spencer's Saturday job, and I was offered full-time employment there. See if you don't put that in your pipe and smoke it.
I was
a freezer checker.
Yes, I was head Saturday boy at Safeways, and they offered me a full-time job as well. Thank you.
I know, you see, they knew what they were doing in those days.
It's a small world, but I wouldn't want to hoover it. But just last week, I was interviewing somebody for an internal corporate thing. He was called Christos Adamantiadis, a Greek man. And I was able to point out that he had the name of a 70s, 80s superstar embedded in his surname, which he hadn't appreciated till I
told him. No, and he went, what?
Adamantiadis. Anyway, we move on. We've shaken your tree. And now we stay in your clearing, which is in your bathtub. And I'm still intruding, but you've got lots of bubbles up. That's all good. And now we're going to talk about alchemy and gold. When you're at purpose and in flow, Arabella Weir, Far Show Queen, what are you absolutely happiest doing in what you're here to reveal to the world? So when are you absolutely at your happiest?
If it's professionally, I would say I'm my absolutely happiest making people laugh. I really, really love doing that. And I did a live show on my own, first time I'd ever done a solo show. And I couldn't believe, I thought, oh my God, I've written this. And all these hundreds of people are laughing. And they're right in the room with me. I like that very much. And that's the fruits of your labor. You know, if you've been working hard to do that and honing something. But probably if I had to distill that into one thing, I don't think I'm ever happier than when I'm doing the South African makeup lady from the Fast Show.
Nah.
Because I have so enjoyed doing that Durban accent and I have honed it and absolutely perfected it. And I absolutely love it. And she was such a vile woman and I based her on a very unpleasant woman called Ilsa. I love, love, love doing that.
And can you say nah fins for me? Because our family is saying that.
No fins. No, she's not. Nah, it's not. No. Are you coming to my house now or right now? But when they say no, they say no fins. I see that you're bald. No fins. I see that you're losing your hair. No fins. Yeah, oh my God, I love doing that. Love, 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 loved it. And then in not worky way, I mean, I'm never happier than when I'm with my kids and my friends.
Yes.
I got an MBE last week and I did a lunch afterwards where, but it sounds very swanky, but the restaurant said, would you like our private room? And I went, well, no, not if it's extra money. And they went, no, it won't be. And I looked around the table and I thought, I've got all the people I love most in the world. And it was my kids and my closest friends. And yeah. I thought, oh, no, this is nice. Oh, and I was drinking, of course. So that's obviously my happiest
place. Red wine is still there, of course. Love.
It wasn't red wine, mate. It was champagne. I'd been...
I've been gonged.
I'd been gonged. But yeah, I've got some really close friends and I'm very lucky indeed.
Lovely answer. Thank you so much. And now, finally, we award you with a cake. So do you like cake, Arabella?
I would do a self-deprecating, stupid answer that would be nice, that wouldn't let my parents off the hook. But because it'd be, well, does she look like she likes cake? Aye. yes, I do like cake very much indeed.
What cake would you like, please? And you get to put a cherry on the cake in a moment.
Ooh, I'm on death row and you're saying we can get the cake through. I was going to say chocolate, but I think I might go carrot.
This is a bit of a carrot cake dog's toy. So look at that. Get in.
I think I might go carrot. Not too heavy on the frosting. I don't love, you know, when you get sort of, but otherwise I might go, I mean, a really good chocolate cake.
I like the fact you interpreted it as I'm on death row. This is the Good Listening To show, not the Death Row podcast. But anyway.
No, so. But it's just, you know, you're on death row, you know, it's cake or death. And you go, oh, I've got one bit of cake to go. I think I'll, will it be?
That's more the Kathy Burke construct. She's got a wonderful podcast about what you do when you're.
Yes, and Kathy has not asked me about on it yet. So, but yes, what do you do? But I always think of it, you know, you've got one last time to eat pudding. What's it going to be?
I love that answer.
And, very rude and you'll have to block your ears, but my sister used to play a game of f*** or die. So, you know, this is the last bloke on earth you can have sex with, or would you rather die? And you go, oh, I think I'll die. You might go,
Back to the world-renowned economist that you mentioned earlier on, that was a bit economical.
I think I'd have chosen death.
I'm going to kill myself. And now you get to put a cherry on the cake is the whole point of me wibbling on about cake. So now what's a favourite inspirational quote, Arabella Weir, that's always pulled you towards your future and given you succour?
Oh, it's a bit sort of, you know, fridge magnet homily, but it would be yourself. Be yourself because you're never, there's nothing else to be. Don't be what other people want, just be yourself. But of course, finding out what you want and who you are is very difficult. So saying be yourself is easily enough, but you've got to find out who you are in the first place. But be yourself. Know thyself.
Be yourself because everyone else is taken. I love that. That's a famous Oscar Wilde quote, be yourself because everyone else is taken, isn't it?
Well, the one I love is Burns, which is all that God would give us the gift to see ourselves as others see us. And given that Burns was unbelievably promiscuous, you think, yeah, mate, what about starting with you? But yes, oh, that we would have the gift to see ourselves as others see us. But I actually don't know whether that, I mean, it's very important to see yourself, to know thyself. But I think be yourself is my takeaway.
Thanking you, please. And now, with the gift of hindsight, what notes, help or advice might you proffer to a younger version of yourself? And pick an age.
Don't sleep with everybody who fancies you.
Good advice.
Don't sleep with every boy who asks you to sleep with them, because there will definitely be others. And I would say that starts with me at about 15, 16, and probably lasts till I was 38. I was brought up with, you're not good enough, you're not special enough, you're not pretty enough, you're not thin enough. So when anything, in the unlikely event anything comes your way of work opportunities or boy interest, boy in my case because I'm heterosexual, the idea that I might be able to say, actually, I may not be the most beautiful person in the world, but I'm special enough to not want you.
Yes.
Or to be allowed to say, no, thank you. Thank you for your interest, but no, thank you. Never even occurred to me. It was that you just had to say yes to everything.
I love that. So, long period, 14 that to 38.
That's not entirely true, because it makes me sound like I've had sex with every single person who ever said it. But yes, I definitely never thought, wait a minute, do I fancy you? Mm. It was like kind of, oh, this really, all the girls want this boy and he's set his cap at me. I better say yes. And then always thinking, did I really want to do this? Mm. So, yeah.
To your
that would be
self.
The advice I'd give to my younger self.
Lovely. And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given by somebody else?
Never drive in shoes you care about.
Would you like to tell us a tiny bit more about that?
My mother was very posh. And someone said, have you got some advice to give your daughter? And obviously everyone thought it was going to be, you know, only ever marry a man you love. Don't marry for money, marry for love, or plow your field professionally and work hard. Yes, never drive in shoes you care about.
Thanks, Mum.
Where's the crease?
I'm very happy I'm speaking to you and not your mum in this podcast. Thank you very much. And now we're ramping up to Shakespeare shortly to talk about legacy and how you'd most like to be remembered. And in fact, just before we get there, if I may, this is the Pass the Golden Baton, Please. Now you've experienced this from within in this slightly surreal landscape or storyscape of the Good Listening To show. Who would you most like to, they don't like it up at Mr. Mannering, but who would you like to pass the golden baton along to keep the golden thread of the storytelling going?
Rosie Jones.
Rosie Jones. Thank you.
Who I think is wonderful. She's quite high profile at the moment.
Yes, yes, yes. Gosh, thank you. That's fascinating and wonderful. Thank you so much. But you're definitely removing Isabella Weir from the equation.
Oh, my God, she'd kill me. She'd absolutely kill me if I said, by the way, darling, they want you on this podcast. She'd go, what, mummy? Are you mad?
Are you absolutely mad? Yes. So thank you for qualifying and correcting. That's good. And now, inspired by Shakespeare, by the way, the clocks have gone forward. Have you noticed we're going to be in the dark together soon in your bathroom?
Yeah.
Getting darker. I look more like Count Dracula the more it gets into the dark of night. Anyway, inspired by Shakespeare and All the World's a Stage, this is the actual, well, it's not a first folio, but this is the actual complete works I bought for myself when I went to the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School. It says Chris Grimes, 16986. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's an authentic prop. Thank you. Julia Davis and I subsequently were in a comedy improvisation company together called More Fool Us. That was our connection.
More Fool Us. That's good.
And then now I run one called Instant Wit. Anyway, now we're going to talk about Shakespeare. How, when all is said and done, Arabella Weir, would you most like to be remembered?
Loyal, funny, and hardworking. Yeah, I think that's probably it.
And sassy.
Stroppy.
Stroppy.
Loyal, stroppy, hardworking, loving. I think I'd like to be remembered as very loving.
Wonderful. Where can we find out all about you on the old hinterweb?
I was going to say, on BBC iPlayer, you can see all of Two Doors Down, which I loved, loved, loved making.
Yeah.
But probably since I wrote it as well, and I'm playing so against type, on YouTube, you can see all of the show, my spoof cookery show that I wrote with John Cantor, starring Richard E. Grant and me, it's called Posh Nosh. And I don't think I've ever had as much fun doing that as I did. And because we made up all these, now you've got to thoroughly embarrass the carrots here, because otherwise they will get depressed. Because we were just taking the, and it was, yeah, that's on YouTube. So you can see that if you're interested. And I don't know what else. I mean, Wikipedia, that's not entirely right, but it's mainly right. And yeah, well, the Fast Show is coming. We're doing a tour again in 2025.
Ah, that's coming back. Lovely.
Oh, yes, back.
Yes.
More reboot.
Love that.
We're doing that again because we all love doing that.
I've had Charlie and you in the clearing so far. I will try and chip away on the other lovelies as well. Bless you. Final question. As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, is there anything else you'd like to say?
This is where I leave a really long gap and go, no, I can't think. I think we've pretty much covered everything. I've done what I always do, which is slag off my parents, tick. Gone on about how fat I was, tick. And I think I failed to say how incredibly pretty I was when I was young. And how I should have definitely made more of that.
Lovely. Thank you so much for saying yes and for being here in the Good Listening To show clearing.
You've been listening to The Good Listening To Show with me, Chris Grimes. If you'd like to be in the show too, or indeed gift an episode to capture the story of someone else with me as your host, then you can find out how, care of the series strands at the goodlisteningtoshow.com website. And one of these series strands is called Legacy Life Reflections. If you've been thinking about how to go about recording your life story or the life story of somebody close to you for posterity, but in a really interesting, effortless and creative way, then maybe The Good Listening To Show can help. Using the unique structure of the show, I'll be your host as together we take a trip down memory lane to record the 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 of either your or their life story. And then you can decide whether you go public or private with your episode. Get in touch if you'd like to find out more. Tune in next week for more stories from the clearing. And don't forget to subscribe and review wherever you get your podcasts.